Play it from the top, I'm staying. Let me get a track just to make sure I'm...
What's up, y'all? Welcome or welcome back to the Lunchtime Foolery Podcast. It's your boy Raheem Dumont back in the mic. And today, I have two very special guests with me, members of my family. It's my great-uncle, Uncle Quentin Johnson, as well as his son, my cousin, Sean Johnson, who's going to be on this episode with us. So, how was it like growing up in Louisiana?
It's like growing up in Croatia. That ball going on. Wherever I went somewhere, I always wore the best clothing. Mm. But one time, I went to visit my girlfriend in the project. And I had one of the finest hats it had.
Which project?
Melpomene.
Okay.
Melpomene project. So the police passed by and asked me, "Hey, nigga, you seen another nigga pass here with a pistol?" I said, "Do I look how I'm running?" They crossed the neutral ground, came over there, pushed me up against the project step, clean as I was. I don't want nobody to touch my clothes and shoes. I didn't know that in my sleeve, you know what in box cutters?
Mm-hmm.
I pulled my sleeve out and cut him from here to here.
The police?
And I was out. I cut the police. I didn't want them to touch me.
So what happened after that?
They knocked me out, put me in a 6 precinct with another friend of mine. And that night, they found out who I was because of my age. I was only 16. Then they found out I was grandson's son. Oh, Lord, what are we going to do? Working for Carlos Marcello, the mafia.
So wait. All right, who's grandson and... And what's the name you just said?
Granderson Johnson is my father.
Okay.
And he was always in the mafia.
So what's his mafia?
Carlos in New Orleans? Marcello. He owned Louisiana.
He owned Louisiana?
He owned everything in Louisiana. The grocery stores, the clothing stores, the selling, anything you sell, you got to give them half. And they pass by and ask you how much you made. And if you didn't make enough money, then you had to go to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And put the baseball bat.
And so they'll give you the baseball bat? That's what you're saying?
No, because I always knew what I was doing. I always knew where I was going.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't join any gangs. Never join a gang because you can't go anywhere. But me by myself, me, Chapman, we always, and Chris, we always wore big time rings and nobody would touch us. Nobody could touch us. Scottish was one of the best places to go. The Blue Goose, the Muck Bucket of Blood, anywhere we wanted to go, we went.
So I did a podcast with my grandfather a few months ago. He mentioned the Bucket of Blood. That was a part of New Orleans.
So what's your
connection in there?
Well, connection there is everybody can't go in. Scottish can't go in. You go in Scottish, but if you were one of their members, you could go to the back of Scottish and get anything you want. You go back there and get your medicine and your liquor, mm-hmm. and you can go back there and dance. Everybody couldn't go to the back of Scottish. And the Bucket of Blood either. I had many privileges. Mm-hmm. One day, I was standing on a corner drinking beer out of a bar. I was too young, 17, still 17. And I was standing outside, and they got all three bars around there, were all open, motorcycle clubs and everything. They stopped me on the corner and said, "Hey, nigga, go inside and drink that blood, that beer." I just looked at him. So I made an attempt like I was going in. Then they came back a few minutes later and jumped out their car. And that was a fight. I always carried my little hatchet
mm-hmm.
besides my switchblade. And I took it out. And that's when I was out. I was back in the 6th precinct. When I got to the sixth precinct, you know how a walking cane?
Mm.
You know how those bars are made?
Yeah.
They put it around your neck and pull you to there until they get tired of beating on you. Then you ever saw a small table? Just a small fold-out table.
Yeah.
They put you under that table. And four big policemen with all their boots and everything they had on, all kicked. You have to hide your eyes and head. You will be messed up.
Wow.
That's the way it was when you went back there. And then the same week, a friend of mine called Grape. They hung him.
The police?
Grape, the police hung him.
Wow.
Chuck used to be with us, but Chuck he talked too much. So when everybody went to bed that night, we found Chuck hanging from a hot water pipe.
Mm.
Police didn't allow you to do nothing. So there was a lot of animosity down there, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to shoot, but they didn't shoot as much as they do now.
I mean, they did other things to kill you. So, but what about you, cuz? How was life growing up in New Orleans?
New Orleans for me wasn't too bad. My dad had changed his life. So the fact that we had different associates, and my dad had put us in a different neighborhood, it really wasn't too bad. But, you know, going to school, catching a city bus was always adventurous because you had to, you know, nobody, you didn't have a school bus.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad decided he didn't want me to go to junior high, high school in New Orleans. So he moved us to La Place, got to be out of the city. Now, my brother and sister, they both went to school, they went to Cohen and Warren Easton. And, you know, they had their struggles making it through. And my brother, who has the same name as my dad, you know, he struggled to get through New Orleans. His life was a little different from mine. He had his own stories, but he passed in 97. But living in La Place was different because I was considered a city boy and I didn't know anybody. So going to schools in La Place, people were always kind of like, since you weren't related to anybody, it was kind of harder. So I ended up having to fight a little bit more just because I wasn't related to anybody.
Okay.
And then finally because my cousin James was a little bit ahead of me and Keisha was a little bit behind me. So we weren't always in the same schools at that time. So it was a little difficult, but being a witness, that was always a protection. That was a Jehovah's Witness by this time.
Yeah, by that time.
Helped me a lot, a little bit. So my experience was a little different, but you know, you faced the kind of things you had to face of racism in school. From the teachers, the books, the way they treated you, it was always, I remember I had the highest reading average in the school. Like there was nobody on my level. Mm-hmm. I had my own tutor. But because I hung around people who had, you can say, bad attitudes, they put us all in the same category.
Okay.
So they kicked me out of my privileges and put me in the, I guess you can say, the dumb class until my mom got over there, just because the principal's daughter could not match
your reading level,
my reading level.
Not
in
mine.
School. So my mom came over there, you know, she caused some issues about that, but they literally tried to put me down just because the principal's daughter couldn't match what I was doing in school.
That's you know, your aunt,
mm-hmm.
your aunt Joy,
yep.
How we got married.
How did y'all get married?
Well, I didn't even know her. Uncle Henry didn't want her to talk to me. He said, if you walk on one side of the street, you walk on the other. Mama Jean said to say, if you walk on this side of the street, you go down the other. And be there, you talk to him or speak to him. So she had to go downtown to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody walked to Canal Street. So she went down Barone Street when I saw her, and I would go down Carondelet Street. And there we would talk all the time after she paid her bills.
So y'all were sneaking it?
My God, they did not want me to marry that girl. That same girl, Joy Johnson. Joy Brenda Johnson was one of the best persons there was. Because, you know, after we got married, I was still in the mafia.
Oh, so you was in the mafia?
I stayed in the mafia. I was in two mafias. One in California and one here.
All right, we're going to talk about that. But what are you saying about Mighty Joy?
Yeah, so we would stand there and take a picture at a place called Steve's. Mm. We could never bring those pictures back home to show nobody. I still have them in my book. Well, one day, I was trying to take over another territory.
That's what the mafia?
Yeah, take over another person's territory because I had a drugstore.
Okay.
I had my own drugstore. I made my own medicine. Cordon and two Caro syrup and red medicine. I made my own money. So I took over a guy's Jimmy Lee's territory. And one day I got home for the first time in a minute time, I sat on my step. But I said, well, let me go take a walk to the corner, which was Drides and Failure. When I got halfway to the corner, shots rang out. Joy was sitting on the steps. She had to run inside. They shot up my whole house. Shot up my house. But you see, they didn't know that there were three bathrooms and one other shop. But that I knew how to get in there, but they didn't know how to get in there. So I got away for a month. But they shot that house up.
Who shot it up?
The other gang members.
Okay.
The one who I was taking it from, Jimmy Lee's gang. They didn't want me in existence. But I had too much behind me. It depends on who you know that you don't stay in prison long. Parish prison, I ran that place. Me and Sir Fat, we ran that place, man. We got our butt kicked, but we ran it.
But so how do you get in the position to run a prison?
Well, you have to know you, when you go in to eat, first you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy would, you know, we'd talk and they'd say, oh, you from the Big Easy, you are from the Big Knife country. I never talked. You never talk to these guys. You just look at them. So when I got there, and they all got in the corner playing cards. We had a rec room. So the best thing to do to let people know who you are, it was my time to mop the rec room, you know? So I got some hot water, got all some bleach, and anything else I could find. And I went over to the table, took the mop out the bucket, and dumped it on all of them. And they were all screaming and howling. I got put in the hole for that. You know what the hole is, huh?
Yeah.
They put you down in the hole, you can't see nothing for a week. When I came out of the hole, I didn't have to say nothing to nobody. That's the way it was with me. You couldn't walk the street. They always wanted to pat you down. And I've asked me what my name was. I wouldn't give them my name. But that's the way I came up. You had to come up rough up in New Orleans. If you didn't, you are nothing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I left here and went to California. I had to leave after that incident. Went to California.
When they were shooting?
After they shot the house up.
Okay.
So I moved with Mama Velma.
Yeah.
So I went to California and I got with my brother. My brother was a model.
A model?
He was a model okay. clothing.
Okay.
And I followed it through him. And we had a place called, what they call it? They didn't call it a house of prostitution. They called it an unfit place. And I was up there rolling my medicine that I got from Mexico. You know that green medicine that y'all use?
Yeah. I know.
I'm upstairs with a girl upstairs. She lived downstairs. And I was upstairs. And I looked out the window when two white guys knocked on the door. And I was very new at this. And I peeped out the window and I saw a baby carriage in the back. So I said, this might be all right. I opened the door, let the guys in. 2 minutes later, they came out and said, everybody's under arrest. But we knew Tommy Tucker, we knew everybody, Geraldine Dunn, everybody who was in the mafia. So we didn't stay there long. But the judge told me, he says, you know, Quinn, I know your record. My name wasn't Quinn then. I know your record. What I'm going to do is give you at least a couple of months. So if you're in the mafia, they're going to get you out right away. I was in Biscayne State Penitentiary.
It's in California?
California, Biscayne State, it was barely new, and they don't lock the doors. Because once you touch the door, you're dead.
Mm.
You're shot. Now, you've seen Perry Mason, right?
No.
You never seen Perry Mason on TV?
No, I haven't.
Man, that was one of the biggest prisons back then, one of the worst. Well, Surfat ran that. He and I ran that too.
Well, I got a question. Before you get too deep, how did you join the mafia in California? Because you're talking about a lot of like mafia things that's happened, but how did it happen?
Well, I was in charge of the lottery. My dad would put me in charge of the lottery, and I would walk down the levee and get people's numbers. And they give me their numbers, and I would take them to a guy. Because you couldn't cross the levee because one side was black and one side was white. So at the end of the month, everybody, I had to walk back down that levee. Nobody touched me because I was in control. This white guy had me in control. He knew me. He knew my dad. It was the old South Pole Club, the new South Pole Club, stuff like that. So I picked up the money, brought it to the people who they had, and I made a lot of money out of that. Plus my medicine I was making, you know? So I made good money off my medicine, man.
So that's how you join the mafia?
That's how you join.
That's
the way you join. You don't join a gang. Never join a gang. Gangs get you in trouble. See, everybody black was this was wrong. They had to pick up your desk, check you out, check your papers out, and told me that I had to get a this thing to go to the service. What you call it?
To get drafted.
You're drafted. He said, you want your draft card at to go to the service. I said, man, that war is not my war. That's the Vietnam black and brown people war. That's not my war. That's your war. He said, well, you better have one by Monday. You think I have one by Monday?
Nope.
I just moved to another part of town. That's all. I never had a draft card.
To this day?
To this very day, I still don't have one.
You dodged.
And I'm going to tell you, I have never, ever been beaten by this.
By the hands?
By the hand, never. So I ran over my girlfriend with my bicycle.
You ran your girlfriend over the bicycle?
Yeah. So, but she had gotten a new boyfriend by then. I didn't know. So he came to the sweet shop and said, tell Johnny come out the sweet shop. I said, man, I'm playing pool, brother. I'm be playing $6 pool. He said, well, I want him out here now. I said, go tell that fool, whoever it is, Lewis Bush. They were a gang. They were big time. So when he came, when I did walk out the door, he put his hands up and that was it. You don't put your hands up.
You gave him the blues?
I gave him the bolo. You know what the bolo is? Look in the book. Kid Gavilan. You never talk to nobody who say they're looking for you. You just, all of a sudden, he said, look, boom. And you twist their neck and try to break their arm. So I've never been beaten in my life. You have to do it. You have to do it in the right way. Up, this way, and back. They have no other choice. Then his cousin say, hey, that's my cousin you just hit. Boom! Do the same thing to him.
Well, I got another question. Yeah. You were talking about my Auntie Joy earlier, you know, before we were talking about like the mafia in California. I want to understand, how did you actually end up marrying her if her parents didn't want you to? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, they didn't want us to get married. But when she got to be 18, we went to the sweet shop together and heard Jerry Butler's first record that ever came out. What's the name of that? The Iceman. Well, anyway, we decided that I said, you want to get married? So I went and bought some furniture. At least I stole some furniture. out of furniture store, me, Chris, Larry, all of us, and put it in a house next to Jesse. I don't know if you know who Jesse is, but that's Mama Lil's sister.
Okay,
she lived next door. And she hated my guts. She locked the bathroom on me. And I tore it down with an axe. So I say, well, I got some furniture here. I got a bed. They had a big round tub back then. And we decided, all the guys that I was in the group with, they say, y'all getting married? Yeah, we'll help you get married. I bought an $18 ring. Joy bought a dress. I went to Harry Hyman, bought a suit. And we went to Mama Velma. Mama Velma hated me too. And Daddy Vic hated me too. I thought we were getting married anyway. Nobody in my family, nobody in her family helped us get married. So they gave us two anniversary parties. Gave one in New Orleans and one on Thalia Street. And that's where we got married, in La Place at the Kingdom Bar.
Mm.
We got married, but a crooked preacher, one who was trying to go with Mama Velma. And we moved into the house and that's where we stayed.
Did you ever become, I guess, closer with her family?
Well, after I went to California, I told her that somebody came to my door with some Watchtower and Awake magazines, and I rejected them. Then one day I had a job upstairs. I looked down and see all these people. I said, I'm going down here and talk to them. They had two beautiful girls down there that I could use in my club, you know, in my little gang, in my little group. I told the guy, I moved in a small apartment. I was trying to get away from the mafia. So I moved to the east side of town, the poor side of town. And I saw him always bringing him two magazines all the time. So I told him, I said, hey man, I want two magazines too. He said, your brother, he was Spanish. You know, he couldn't speak good English. Brother, they're gonna come give you two magazines. He said, you want some magazines? I said, I don't mind reading them. He came to my house and dropped 20 magazines on my front door, inside my house. And then he would come down there and say, I said, well, look, they're going to give me a Bible study. Or what? They come to your house and give you a Bible study? Tell them I need a Bible study real bad. I want to hear the Lord. I never read the Bible in my life. I want to know about the Lord. He said, it'll be there next week. Next week, can't, nobody came. Came the next week. Nobody came. Then the third week, two guys, 7 foot tall, size 12 shoe, knocked on my door. I said, ooh, I sprayed my room because Joy was still in New Orleans with our mama, with Mama Jean. Sprayed my room and I opened my door. They said, we heard you on a Bible study. I didn't tell them it was crazy, but they stuck their foot in my door. And that's how we talked downstairs, upstairs for about 3 hours. Then we stayed there another 2 hours. They said, look, we coming back next week. I like the way you talk. I said, okay, fine. Then I started reading the magazine. The magazine made understanding because I never knew the Bible in the first place. So next week, Tommy and I said, look, we're not going to stay here. We're going down to the nightclub down by the pool hall. And as soon as we got down, I looked outside my window. I parked my car around the corner. And as soon as we got downstairs, who was sitting on the stoop? You know what the stoop is?
Yeah.
Like in California, everybody had these things they sit on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they were sitting.
Who?
We told you we were coming back. I said, well, we were just coming downstairs. No, you guys were going out, huh? We told you we were coming back. So they sit down there for 3 hours talking about the Apostle Paul, Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul. And they said, look, it's getting kind of dark. Why don't we just go upstairs? I said, yeah, I'm cooking the chicken. We're going to fry chicken anyway. They sit up there another 3 hours. And it was too late to go to the nightclubs because nightclubs close up at 12 o'clock up there. So I never go out in the daytime. I always went out at night. So they said, okay, we'll be back next week. And there was a Kingdom Hall 4 blocks from my house. I passed it, but never knew what it was. So they would come to my house early, early and say, look, we're going to go to the Kingdom Hall. I said, okay, if y'all want to go. I didn't have a suit. I just had pants and shirt with my name on them.
Mm-hmm.
That one suit. So instead of them driving to the Kingdom Hall, they walked me to the Kingdom Hall. I know what they were doing, preaching to me at the same time, telling me about the Bible. I always listened to people, you know, because Joy was a very nice person, the best person I knew. You can't find another wife like Joy, never. She was very smart with money, very smart, and she never, ever got upset with me, but she knew what I was doing. Coming home 3 o'clock in the morning with my own pool sticks that I got from Sam's, made my money. She never argued. All she did was say, do you want something to eat? And that's how we stayed together for 57 years. No, the brothers told me, see, look, you want to give a talk in the hall? I said, yeah, I don't mind. But I could read anything. So they gave me the Bible to get up there and read. And they say it'll be a couple of weeks. So I sent a letter down here to Mama Jean and told them that I was going to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And they all got on her bed. So you better give a four-way ticket. But she got a one-way ticket and came to California. and saw that and said, every time I read the Bible, she wouldn't look at the Bible. She would look at me because she never trusted me in the first place. Never trusted nobody. So I gave that first talk at the Bible and she read it. And the next year, a couple of weeks later, the guys told me, said, look, we have a convention down here in a couple of weeks. You want to come down? I said, yeah. I don't have a suit. Just don't worry about it. Just bring a bathing suit. A bathing suit and a t-shirt. A bathing suit and a t-shirt. And next thing you know, they said, okay, it's time for you to get baptized. Wow. I didn't know what baptism was. So they baptized me then. And after that, a week later, they came back and said, look, we're going to do some street work. You want to go with us? Right in Hollywood, near Baldwin Hills, where Tina Turner and them live, all them people live. So I went out with them, stood on the corner with the magazine, and the club let out at 7 a.m. And they would pass that. I was behind the magazine. Didn't want to know who I was. Mm-hmm. And one guy peeped around there. Chuck said, hey, Quinn. I had changed my name by then. I had legally changed my name by the time before I got baptized. You have to do that.
You have to change your name?
You have to change my name. Now, I didn't want them to find out my real name in the first place. I had a Bobby Blue Bland hairdo. You know Bobby Blue Bland? No.
No.
Oh, Lord. My little biggest. Man, we all had used to go get our hair done at least twice a week. You get your hair done, then you get a comb out. That was $24 a month to get your hair done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was out there and I did the street work. And he said, Quinn, what were you doing with the magazine? I said, oh, I was just looking at it. He said, no, you wasn't. You was hiding from it. Don't hide from anybody. You want to be a Jehovah's Witness? Be one. And I said, well, okay. Joy stayed there that year. The next year, Joy got baptized. She got baptized. And I came down here from California in 1975. And I came down here and we passed by my daddy's house. And who was sitting outside but Henry Hunter and his wife. And the first thing I could do was start talking to them about the Bible because they were about to get married, Catholic. And they listened for me for about 2 hours. And they would ask me all sorts of questions. And they listened and they listened. The next day, I talked to June by herself. Then June, I was leaving town. I turned them over to another brother who was way better than I was with the Bible. And they got baptized through him. That's how they became Jehovah's Witnesses. And Mama Jean, Mama Velma, all of them. Mama Jean was the best person I ever met in my life. She was way better than my mother. My mother threw all of her kids away when we were little. I have a picture of it when we were 7, 8, 9, 12. My sister was 13. And we all went our own way. But she was the best person I knew. And I married her. All the girlfriends I had, all the most beautiful girls you ever want to meet, I married Joy. You know, because I didn't like the way Daddy Vic was treating her at the house. He had other women too. And we went to the same bar room at the same time. And I would buy a drink and he would buy a drink. He said, look, you don't tell on me and I won't tell on you. I said, no problem. We drank together, bro. He was crooked, boy.
Yeah.
He was crooked. But that was her dad. That's what they told her to do, she did it. but it wouldn't allow her to be out of the house at the, after 5 o'clock, after five o'clock, she had to be inside. I said, okay, now we got our own house. And she never, ever, never, ever fussed with me. I used to make her mad. And that's the way life was back then. Couldn't walk the street. If you were well-dressed and wore the best clothing, they would stop you and ask you, nigga, where you got some clothes from? And I would just look at them. And for somehow, we didn't have phones back then, but somebody who passed that knew me and stopped, and they found out that I was Quinn Johnson. They knew me as Johnny down here. They found out I was Quinn Johnson. And Joe and I have been Jehovah's Witnesses now for over 55 years before she died. Mm-hmm. I was the only friend in the world. I never had friends. You never have friends. We all broke in jewelry stores and broke in jewelry stores. Some got shot, some got killed. But I was smart enough to know what I was doing. You know? But that's the way we came up. And she came to California, she stayed there. And that's where my oldest son lived in California. That's why I joined him in the mafia, my brother, my oldest brother. And I was playing drum music up there too. I had my own band called the Matadors. But after I got completely involved in Jehovah's Witnesses, I just gave the band up. Now I have 10 drums, 10 conga drums. You want to know how to play drum? Come down here.
You know, to learn?
Yeah, man, I got 10 conga drums. That's all.
I want to know about when was the first time that you left America? Because I know you have a lot of time spent in Honduras, right?
Oh, the first time I left America was went to Dominican Republic, huh? Dominican Republic, no, South America.
You toured to Europe.
We went to Europe. We went to Spain. We went to Germany. We went to Switzerland. And I told her I was going to take her on a cruise. And I came home with two tickets and I put them down. I said, you want to go on a cruise? She said, not with you. You never threw me overboard. I don't trust you, Quinn. I love you, but I don't trust you. I said, look, girl, you know how I was before. So I put the ticket there and I said, look, do you know Mary Lazar that lived down the street? Yeah, she'd be glad to go. Guess what? When I got off from work that evening, man, she had all kind of luggage stacked up. And we've been cruising ever since. We've been on 45 cruises.
45.
Now they're trying to follow us. 45 cruises. We've been on every ship in the ocean. We would drive to Miami. We would drive to Texas. We would drive to Seattle to stay in Alaska for a while. And I wouldn't allow her to drive to work. Mm-hmm. I wanted her to take care of those kids, teach them, take them to white restaurants that were now open. And sit down and let me know if anybody says something. And that's what she did. She took her time and taught those kids well. That's how he came into the truth.
So what made you leave the mafia life? Well, I guess, was it becoming Jehovah's Witness?
Well, after I got out of penitentiary, Biscayne State Penitentiary, something after I learned, I started learning the truth about Jehovah's Witnesses. I say, you know something? I went to the barber and got my, just called the Golden West. These guys are rich. He said, you gonna get that, your mop cut off? I said, yeah, just go ahead and cut it off. Man, you don't really believe that. I said, yeah, just go ahead and cut it off.
Yeah, he called your hair a mop. So what hairstyle do you have?
Well, everybody was called the mop who had those big hairdos, you know? Not natural hairdos. We had our hair well done.
Yeah.
But you're Jackie Wilson?
No. Man, I'm 20, Unc. I don't know what you're talking about.
Those were some fancy hairdos we had back then. Everybody knew who you were when you had a hairdo. Or you couldn't go into the after-hour joints without a hairdo like that. Mm. Everybody had one. So after that, we stayed together for a long time. We've been traveling in the world ever since. We've been around the world twice.
You've been around the world twice.
We've been around the world twice. There ain't no country we never been to.
So what you do in these countries? Is this you, teaching people the truth?
To teach people the truth.
That's what y'all doing?
Yeah, that's we went on vacation, but we always had a roll on with books and magazine and everything like that. And we wouldn't walk around the ship and talk to people. We go sit in the corner and people would ask us questions. I go sit in the library and they would ask us questions. And I asked them if I could leave some of the literature there. And some of them was in Spanish, some of them was in
Jamaica,
Switzerland.
Tell them about the drive when we drove from New Orleans to Honduras.
Oh, we drove to Honduras. And I didn't even know it. For my first time, I never drove to Honduras. Mm. I had a friend who told me, he said, "I'm going to write it down for you. And we both going to leave tomorrow." He called me up that night and said, "Hey, man, I can't go." "Well, just write it down for me, man. I'll find my way." And you know what? I got lost one time.
So when you say write it down, you had to use directions like that?
Yeah. I went to Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, Dominican Republic.
Off a map.
And I drove. He drove with me too.
How about when we lost our brakes in the Sierra
Madre? Oh, we lost our brakes in the Sierra Madre Mountains. I thought it was just clouds. We were above the rain. Above the clouds.
With no brakes.
And the brakes went out. My brakes kept going slower and slower. And then all of a sudden it came to a stop. And when you come to this stop in Honduras, when you look over to your right, there's nothing there. There's no railings in those countries. You look to your left, there's no railings. So somehow, one of the guys, the policeman that owned it, he passed us by. He said, "Man, you don't have any brakes. You don't know brakes at all." I said, "Well, what I'm going to do?" He said, "Look, I'll do you a favor." So Joy got on one side. Some other people I took with me got on one side. And there was nothing on the other side. If that van had turned over, we would all been gone. Dead. There was, because when you go down the mountain that far, all they do is throw you a rose.
Mm.
There's no way to come up. They throw you a rose. And that guy fixed that brake till I got to a service station, some other part of Mexico. And Joe knew how to count the money. I didn't know how to count the money. I told him what kind of gas I wanted, Compluto. He said, no, this is it, Joe. I said, "No, get the orange one, the pink one, silver one, like the guy told you." He said, no, this is it here. This is the amount of money you want to pay. This is what you want. Joe, I said, "Fill it up." She had a voice that nobody could understand. When she says something, you better listen.
Mm.
Or you get all your teeth knocked out. That's why all my kids have all their teeth. Never had problem with my children at all. You know?
Good.
You know what grade I stopped in? They threw me out of Woodson School. You wouldn't know it. In the eighth grade. I spent 3 years in eighth grade.
And you didn't go back to school?
Didn't like school. We would dress. Chapman and I would go in the morning. They let us in. Then at 11:30, we go home and change clothes, brand new clothes we had made, and go back. So the teachers got tired of that. So what they did, they blocked all the doors in the morning. They said, you guys can't come to this school anymore. And Woodson was a bad, bad school. That was a school you had to know how to fight or kill.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about going to jail or prison, make it up in your mind that you're going to have to kill somebody. Or you're going to be assisted.
Well, I'm running out of time, y'all. Very insightful conversation. Just, you know, getting a picture of your life. You know, I really enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed talking about it, too.
I don't like to talk about it too much, but I enjoyed your family's house.
Oh, you did?
Company in Dubai.
How was Dubai?
Every white girl over there wanted a picture of me. They kept taking pictures of me. Stop this picture and take pictures of me. Man, I got so many pictures. I said, I'm going to take all these pictures and give them to Joy when she wake up. Because I was black. And they don't have that many black men unless they work over there,
mm-hmm.
even though they're brown. And I would go to a restaurant. Man, they would charge me $2 or $3 for breakfast or lunch.
It's very.
I'm going back one day.
I'm coming on back. Can't wait to host you. But
you must be the youngest one.
No, I'm middle. My sister's youngest.
Oh, because I got a picture. Many of you see that little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Man, she and I stay together all the time. We would go through the mall, sit outside and talk. She's really a nice kid. How old is she
16,
now?
16.
She's 16. And I got all of you guys' pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate Peter letting us coming over there.
Oh, for you know, we appreciate the company. Can't wait to see y'all again. But that was Lunchtime Foodie Podcast, y'all. Peace.
Okay, bro.